your ears and engage your brain. It's time for Grounded with author and speaker Ryan Dobson.
Hey, everybody, I'm Ryan Dobson. It's Grounded in studio with Tobin Heim and Young Neil.
Good morning.
Young Neil!
Young Neil! I blew it. Try it again. Try it again. Do it again.
It's Ryan Dobson. I'm in studio with Tobin Heim and Young Neil.
Young Neil!
Hello.
There it is. See, it better.
I like that. I'm fired up now.
We need more people.
I was turning the ringer off on my cell phone.
More cowbell.
We had a guest the other day, and I left this my cell phone on, so that was super professional.
It's been a long time.
It wasn't that long ago.
It's forgotten.
It 2 weeks ago.
It's forgotten.
Yeah.
Listen, today's an interesting program. We've got Alex
Chediak
on.
Yep.
And he wrote a book on surviving college.
Yep.
And I started looking at it thinking, well, you know, I know 70% of our demographic, 70% of our listeners are between 25 and 54. Most of them will not be in college. Can you apply the principles in this book to our everyday lives? And you can.
Yeah.
It's some very, very interesting concepts. And I like it so that we take something that may have been designed for a certain segment or a niche or niche.
Nicely done.
If I'd like to go hipster on you.
Niche me.
That's right.
You know what's cool? It is,
but we apply it to bigger things. And that's
right.
Something like when I go to Summit, I'm going to go speak there tonight. You're thinking bigger. Instead of just looking at something the way that it is, you can think bigger. We talked about this in mentoring.
Right.
People are like, oh, you know, I don't have a huge story. How can I mentor somebody? It's like, look at your life in a completely different way. Look at your life from someone else's point of view. Is there something that you like that you could teach somebody that maybe they don't know as much about?
Well,
there's so many
things. The thing that's cool about what Alex did is, obviously for some of our audience, I mean, I look at myself and I see some of the audience looks like me. You know, got 10, 12-year-old kids. And in talking to Kara Powell a while back, the thing that I realized very clearly is it's not too early to start preparing your kids for what happens when they leave your home. And I think, you know, I think about our guest, our awesome guest, Kathy McReynolds yesterday, who's got, an 18, a 16, and a 14-year-old. And she is deep in the middle of preparing them for going off to be in college. And I think a bunch of our listeners probably have kids that are on that path. But even if you have young kids, stay with us today because it's never too early.
The program's for everybody. Yeah. Either you're going to apply it to your own kids' lives, you can apply it to your own life, or, shocker, someone that's not your kid who's younger or needs some advice on how to handle everyday life.
And I hope you have people like that in your life. I hope there are kids that are coming to you saying, hey, I don't have this all figured out and I don't feel like I can talk to my parents.
Yeah.
How can you help me? Man, I value those conversations. When I'm with Audrey's friends, and they're like, my mom said this and my mom said that. And without intentionally doing it, I can come in alongside that parent and help encourage their kid along the lines that they would want.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like,
very interesting.
You get a kid over there who's complaining, my mom makes me go to bed earlier. My mom makes me eat my vegetables. I mean, I'm using lame examples. But to be able to come in as another parent alongside, I hope there's parents like that in my kids' lives.
Yes.
When they're at their friend's house.
That's interesting.
And they're doing something knuckleheaded that a parent will say, hey,
see,
you know what? That's probably not the best way for you to handle that.
Very interesting because that used to be the norm and it's not any longer because parents are like, you don't tell my kid what to do. So
well,
that's fine. Here's the deal. I was at a function a while ago. I'm going to make it as vague as possible so that people aren't going, where was it? And I was at a function, and there was someone's kid acting inappropriately. That's how I'm going to put it.
At the function.
Yep. And I had removed my son from the situation, but I was just there, and it was a kid being mean, just being a punk. And I was like, it's enough. So they weren't sharing, and I don't know. So I just put a stop to it. And that kid totally was like, I'm not, you know. And I didn't yell at the kid, but I was like, put it down, give it to the other kid.
Yeah.
And he did. And then I got him to start taking turns. I'm like, see, it's easy. And the kid stuck his tongue out at me. I was like, wow. And
that sounds like a parenting problem.
Not, gracious me. Not at that time, but I was there at another point. And that kid who was, I'm going to go with 7 years old, was pulling all the same stuff in front of one of his parents, and they just watched it and didn't do anything. And I'm like, wow, you're a terrible parent.
Seriously.
I would have been spanked.
Bro, right? Yes.
Oh.
Yes, 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 yes. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Removed and spanked.
Yes.
Yeah.
In totally. Public.
Yes.
So I'm embarrassed.
Yes, 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 yes. And I'm glad Lincoln is not perfect. He is not. I don't think that he would have tried to pull that.
But isn't that part of sending your kids out with another family? Like, you've got to be picky about that.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not
thinking
just sending
about it last
them off
night.
With any wingnut family.
I don't know what I would do if my child was hurt in a situation where they were, you know, being watched by their family.
Right.
Like, we rarely allow – I mean, there's one or two places that we allow him to go that we're not there.
Did I tell you the family that made the kid sign the waiver, or the parents signed the waiver when the kid came over to play?
What?
Southern
Whoa.
California. So you've been there, right?
Right.
Big house, pool, basketball court, the whole deal.
Okay.
Drop your kid off to play date.
Okay.
Hey, would you mind signing this waiver that exonerates us from any injury that your child may incur while playing at our house? Seriously.
Yeah. Sad but true.
And you wonder, did they get sued?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
By somebody
or they know somebody
lawyer.
That did get sued, blah, 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 whatever it is, whatever it is. How about a tiny farm report before we get out?
I love the farm report.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
happened
yeah.
yesterday?
I weeded the entire garden.
Do you have a name for your farm, by the way? Is it like
I'm working
Rustling
on it.
Acres? Or...
I'm working on it. I'm
yeah.
working on it. Yeah, we definitely have some ideas that we're throwing out there, although I'm not going to give them out yet.
Okay, but I just want to make sure you're working on it because I think it's important.
Well, I was telling you this. I don't think I told our audience this. I finally found a sprinkling system that works for the garden, which is very nice.
You did tell me. I was relieved.
And my wife was being super, super encouraging of the day because I was looking at it. Everything was about half dead. And she was like, oh, honey, I mean, with the way that you are with gardens, as soon as you start watering this, I mean, all your plants are going to flourish. They're going to be doing so well. And it made me feel so good, although I didn't know if it would actually thrive or succeed or not. And so Lincoln and I, after work yesterday, started weeding the garden. It's very difficult to teach a four-year-old what is a weed and what is a plant.
Right.
Especially when the plants are tiny. And as we weeded, she was right.
Yeah.
Totally right. My plants are growing. I've got carrots that are showing finely.
Awesome.
The potatoes are going bonkers.
Yeah.
I am so interested to see how – and here's the crazy thing with the potatoes. You know that I am not a patient man.
Really?
Yeah.
Shocker.
I have a difficulty with the patience.
Oh, my gosh. Dude.
I rightfully cannot check on the progress of the potatoes until October.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
It takes them that long?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to be going nuts by that.
I know, because they're growing so well.
Yeah.
And so I stacked another tire, and maybe this weekend I'll even put another tire on because they're growing so quickly.
And so then did the potatoes just grow the whole way down through that?
That's what they're saying. Yeah.
And pull that plant out and there's potatoes everywhere.
You just dump it over and potatoes everywhere.
Oh, my
So
gosh.
I'm very, very excited. So had a good time with the chickens.
Are you going to have a potato harvest festival?
I don't know.
I think you should.
You're
going to be dumping over like 7 or 8 tires worth of dirt. And then pulling potatoes out. It seems like you should serve like cider and make some cookies and do the dumping of the potatoes.
All right.
What do you think about that, Mike?
How about the,
I'd show
either
up for that.
Way?
Mike's
I'll,
not excited about
either
it.
Either way, I'll video it.
I'll do a little video
and show that. Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but as I did, I finished. You know, Lincoln decided he got bored of the weeding, and I don't blame him. He did a great job. We fed the chickens the weeds because the chickens eat anything green you put in there. Virtually loved the weeds.
That's crazy to me.
It's awesome. Totally awesome. And then as I...
Are these the adult chickens or the
yeah,
chicks?
Yeah, yeah. These are hens. These are hens.
Mm.
As I weeded out where I planted peas and beans, peas are coming up, finally coming up, and they look amazing. Different colored leaves. That's how I'm learning to weed, is the vegetables have a very, very different colored leaf than the weeds. And so I'm learning that.
You're learning.
Garth Ween said I should serve deviled eggs. Great idea.
Ooh.
Fantastic idea. From the farm.
I didn't even think of that, Garth.
Yeah, good times.
Way to go.
Good time. And by that
time. Tying it all together.
By that time, I should have cucumbers and tomatoes and all that so I can make some pickles. And
I love it.
Be all set.
Nice,
I think
nice,
potato
nice,
festival.
Nice. So as I weeded away where the beans have grown, every single top of every bean plant minus one has been chewed off by a rabbit.
Oh, seriously?
Dirty rabbits.
You know, we've talked about this before, and I know you were opposed to it.
I was. I may be buying some coyote urine. Some coyote waste product.
I'm sorry, but I've heard that it works like magic.
I have heard that. So I had Laura out there. You know, she wasn't feeling that good. We took a little walk together, and she was sitting out there watching me weed the garden. Which some people are like, why doesn't Laura help you? Because I don't let anybody touch my garden. I mean, it was a miracle. She could not believe I allowed Lincoln to even be in the garden. I'm just super crazy about it. I want to grow food, you know.
Yeah.
And a massive, a gigantic, an incredibly obese mouse came running across the back fence. And Laura was like, I'm out. That's it.
She's done.
I'm done. See you later.
How do you know it wasn't a rat if it was an incredibly obese mouse?
A rat would have been much, much bigger.
Okay, so
pretty big mouse.
So it was a very very big mouse.
So I'm deciding now, should I put traps out?
Yeah. You definitely should.
Yeah, I think so.
Neil has some experience
especially
with
that. Because what I'm hearing is... the feeder for the chicken is off the ground, not allowing mice to get up in it. The food we have for them is in closed, galvanized steel trash cans. They cannot get into that. And yet, the food that the chickens don't eat, when they go into their coop at night, the mice come out and eat all the stuff on the ground. So I think I'm about to go trap crazy.
Yeah. I got a trap.
Yeah, yeah. So you're over in Afghanistan.
Iraq. Yes.
And the mice were so thick, they're literally crawling on you in your bunks as you sleep.
Yeah. They were in our bunks. They were in our tent at work. So
they're
trying to do our job in these all different sizes.
But while you're working?
Yeah.
So they're bold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's tons of them, too. And
Yeah.
So this guy we called Captain America, who's actually Captain Alfonso, had an idea for a mouse trap. So he rigged MacGyver style and used... I'm not even sure exactly what he used, but he found a way to make it so something would stick and the mice would stick to it. And he caught about 43 mice. And
that just creeps me out.
See, that's MacGyver all the way, baby. MacGyver all the way.
That just creeps me out.
43 in one night. Grabbed some random supplies from around base, food, glue, everything else.
Did it all by himself. Nobody
had. Goes to town.
Yeah. And he's like, so y'all going to thank me? We're like, yeah.
Yeah.
But
listen, I love snap traps.
Yes.
I do. I love snap traps because it's over very, very quickly. Mice can get smart, and snap traps don't work well all the time. Glue traps really do work well, except they don't die quickly.
We had to actually put them out of their misery.
Bro.
Yeah.
I let a glue trap out one night, and I heard the scraping, and I came downstairs. Half the mouse on the glue trap, half not, and it's
pulling
trying to
itself
like—
along.
Yeah, dude.
That's sad.
Yeah.
I want something that's going to take care of that part of the business.
I wasn't sad. A little grossed out.
Yeah,
I was
a little
like,
bit.
Yeah. Ooh. It's assistant Connie says she's got glue trap stories. Yikes.
Oh.
I'm not sure if I want to know that. Connie says her spinach is not doing that well. Neil, would you look up and wave to the camera because our listening
Hello,
audience,
everybody.
Yeah, they actually can't see you because it's pointed at me.
Ah.
It's because I'm better looking than you.
Of course, right?
But I don't know it, which makes me good looking.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We're going to have the guest on very, very soon. Listen, something's coming up, I'm so excited. I don't know if you got the email or not, young Neil. Tobin didn't.
Hmm.
A friend of mine who I went to camp with way back in the day, we're talking like 1988 day, is married now. She's a blogger. She's got her own podcast. I've had her on the program in the past. Her husband was a part of an all-Christian card-counting blackjack team.
Wow.
With financial backers. They're not using their own money. This was his job. His job was card counting in virtually
style.
An all-Christian card counting blackjack
team. So did they have like Bible study before they would go count cards?
Listen, pray before they do it. You know?
Most of the people on the team were in full-time ministry positions,
Whoa.
And this was their job. And there's a documentary on it called Holy Rollers. It just played at the San Francisco International Film Festival.
Yes.
So I contacted them. They're sending me the digital screener.
You've got to see that.
So next Wednesday, a week from today, June 22nd, if you're listening to podcast months or years later, look for the June 22nd, 2011 podcast with Mike Adams.
It's going to rock.
We are entitling the most controversial program ever.
I know, that's cool. We need music for that, though.
We do.
Well, okay,
most controversial program ever.
Engineer Mike's looking at me. I've got soundboard and everything else, so I will do my best to get it working by then. Then we'll have the noises and everything else.
Oh, it'll be awesome.
We'll do the Young
fun.
Neil.
Young Neil!
We'll have all that happening.
Love that. See, I'm
else.
Fired up again. I'm
See?
Good for the rest of the day.
All right, Young Neil, you get out of here.
Yes,
we're
thanks
gonna,
for having
we're
me, guys.
We're going to introduce Alex Chidiak. Hopefully I'm saying that right. And Tobin, give us a little bit of bio from Alex, and we'll get into the topic.
All right. So Alex is author of a great book called Thriving in College, numerous articles geared towards young adults. He's an associate professor of engineering and physics, which
– Whoa.
I can't even
– Engineering and physics?
I know. That's the thing that's crazy. He's like super smart. Earned his PhD in material sciences and engineering at – wait for it – UC Berkeley, not exactly a slouchy college, and has apprenticed with John Piper and Tom Steller. Incredibly gifted guy. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Alex, I appreciate it. Hey, I got to ask, going to UC Berkeley and getting those degrees, how did you then write a book on surviving and thriving in college from a believer's point of view? Berkeley, not necessarily known for the Christian Mecca.
That's absolutely the case. Well, I was there for graduate school, for one thing, so it was a little bit of a different experience because I was a little older and in a different world of, you know, kind of in your getting deep into your program and research and all that. But yeah, you know, when I was there, I was watching students. I worked with students. I was a teaching assistant, and then I went and taught at a Christian school. I've been there, been at Christian schools for the last 6 years. So I've been at secular schools, at Christian schools, just watching students live their lives and kind of thinking, you know, I remember when I was an undergraduate and seeing some of the things that are similar and also some of the things that are different about their experience.
So what are the similarities and the differences? I mean, I was a Christian college kid.
Really?
But I spent my first year at secular college.
Right, right.
And so I saw a little bit of both sides of that. As you're observing these two environments, what are the things that really jump out at you?
Well, really what jumps out at me is some of the changes that have happened over the last 15 years or so, whereas students are the challenge, I think, is greater than it's ever been to really launch into independence. So what I wrote Thriving at College to really help students launch into all that goes with responsible Christian adulthood. Mm. And I think this, the challenges that are, they're experiencing are many because of social media, because of just the number of distractions that they can get themselves into in college, both healthy distractions as well as sinful distractions. Even the healthy distractions are potentially a problem because it hurts their GPA, hurts their ability to develop independence because they can constantly get advice from everybody else in their life and makes it harder for them to make decisions individually using critical thinking skills.
Talk about that. How does it make it harder for them to think critically? Is it just overwhelming or you know, focuses being pulled in so many different directions? What's causing that?
So the average freshman today makes 10 or more phone calls to their parents their first semester, right?
Okay.
So this is different than it's ever been. They have more ability to stay in touch with people back at home,
mm-hmm.
not just their parents, but also their high school friends. So this makes it harder for them to develop their own critical thinking skills as to what's more important to do on a Monday night, study for a test on Wednesday or go out with my friends. And that their ability to really develop self-discipline, decision-making skills, and learning to accept the consequences for their decisions, it's slower. I can give you an example that kind of illustrates it. I had a car accident with a college student in a couple of years ago, and everyone was fine. She's blocking traffic in her car, and she's sitting there on the phone, on her cell phone. And I thought, well, maybe she's calling 911. Maybe she's calling her insurance, right? Mm. She's in there for 10 minutes, coming to find out that she was calling her mom and just sitting there blocking traffic, calling her mom the entire time. So it's an example of someone who didn't know what to do. She didn't know to call insurance, to call maybe AAA, to call 911. She's calling her mom to get feedback. So we have this whole thing of helicopter parents, this buzzword. But sometimes it's students that seek it. Sometimes it's parents that seek it.
Absolutely. You know what? This goes to a question I was going to get later, but I want to address it now since you've brought the topic up, dealing with helicopter parents, because a lot of this is a parental issue. You know, I was talking with my intern, young Neil and Tobin today about, you know, my goal as a parent is that when Lincoln leaves the house, he's making the wise decisions for himself, and I trust that he'll do that.
Right.
And that comes from giving him responsibility starting now.
Yeah.
You don't give him all the responsibility now, but you start giving him in little doses to let him, you know, achieve greater and greater maturity. And a lot of parents, because they are helicopter parents, they hover around their kids. Another issue comes in failure. We see this all the time, how in Little League soccer and Little League baseball, I was out one time and a coach came up and said, yeah, he had a parent ask, why couldn't all the kids be in All-Stars?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, it's because they're not all good enough to be in All-Stars. And they're like, well, can't you make it for everybody? And he's like, no, that's what Little League is for. It's for everybody. All-Stars is for good kids. And a lot of times, kids come to college and experience failure for their very first time. They've never experienced that.
Right.
And it's so difficult to handle because their parents have either fixed or allowed them to win at everything throughout their childhood.
We actually had a college professor come on that said she had students' parents call her when they got a bad grade on a test or if they were late with a paper, that the parents would actually pick up the phone and call a college professor and say, oh, you know, Tina was out late last night. She wasn't able to finish her paper. Can you give her a few more days? I mean, what kind of parent
right.
does that, but apparently it's not all that abnormal these days.
Yeah.
No, it's not. No, I get that sometimes. I also hear of parents calling the boss. Like if a student has a part-time job, the parents will call the boss and say, she can't come in this afternoon. She's got a big test.
Oh, yeah.
Or, why did you ask her to do this task? She's not – doesn't feel comfortable with it.
Yeah. Alex, I experienced that. I used to run an intern program in Washington, D.C., a very hard-to-get-into intern program, and I was always stunned. These are kids who supposedly are living on their own in a college, and we would have parents call up and you know, again, ask, well, what is my child need? I mean, by the way, this is even worse. When you've sent them a packet of everything your kid is going to need, mm-hmm. you've sent it to the parent and the child. These are all the things you're going to need in order to be able to live in this environment, and you have a parent call and ask, what does my child need to bring? Well, can you read?
Right.
And then ask, you know, how are they going to be supervised and all these things that adults – we didn't allow children to be in this program. It was only adults, latter years of college, and to hear the parents from questions from parents. You know, so part of what your book is talking about is two parents of, listen, you got to teach your kid to be an adult or they're going to be in trouble in life.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And the thing that goes with that, you're talking about everybody being an all-star or that parent wanting their kid to be an all-star. It makes it hard for students to figure out what their major should be. You know, I've had students come up to me and say, I'm really good at math. And it's like, I'm seeing their test scores, and it's not good. And the student just continues to insist, no, but I really am good at math.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Based on what?
I know, based on some thought they had, someone told them growing up, or some idea they have of what maybe an engineer does, and they have this conception in their head, and they're not listening to the objective feedback that I'm trying to give them. I had a student take a class from me four times and fail it four times before he realized this probably wasn't a good major for him.
But at least he was tenacious, right?
He was tenacious.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. That's a very interesting one, and I see people with that belief systems. Our belief system completely contradicts itself, and it's like, no, it doesn't. Well, how do you say that? It's like saying, you know, 5 + 5 = 800, you know, or equals blue. What are you looking at that would give you that, you know, and it's that parents have said, you're special. You know, I've said this before, and I understand the point people are trying to get across, but I hear motivational speakers telling kids, you can do anything you put your mind to. I tell them, no, you cannot.
Right.
You cannot do anything you put your mind to. You can do whatever it is that God has called you to and nothing more.
Right. And you can do the very best you can at something. There's nothing wrong with giving it your best shot.
Sure.
If it doesn't work out, then okay, then maybe God's not in this. Maybe I should go another direction.
Mm-hmm. So how do you come alongside a kid like that who's ultra convinced, I'm great at math, I'm going to be an engineer, I'm going to keep taking this class till I pass?
Right.
You know, you as a professor, as a faculty member, as an advisor, as a mentor, you've got to come alongside a kid like that. What do you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I want to help him. But I don't want him to waste his time and his money. I mean, college is expensive.
So right.
But normally to start the semester off with, as I ask them a couple questions, what's your – and this is anonymously on a survey. I say, hey, what's your current GPA coming into this class? What grade do you expect to get in this class?
Mm.
How many hours a week do you plan to work in this class? I do this anonymously, get all the feedback, then the next day I talk about it and say, okay, look, this is what you guys said in the feedback in your survey. Usually it's 70% of the class or more thinks they're going to get an A in the class, and they're all planning on working about maybe 4 to 5 hours a week when the class is a four-credit class. So a four-credit class, usually you think 8 hours of out-of-class work.
Yeah.
This is what the typical rule is. So then I discuss them expectations. You know, sometimes we have – I tell them, look, sometimes we have expectations in life and they're unrealistic, and then we're going to be disappointed. It'd be like if I went and tried out for the Los Angeles Lakers right now, they're having a hard time right now, but they wouldn't take me no matter what. There's nothing I can do to get on the Lakers, right? Likewise, some of you have expectations about this class that may be unrealistic. Maybe expectations based on your background that are not going to be met in this class. So then we talk about that. And also, in thriving at college, I unpack this idea of calling. Our calling comes from outside of us. You know, people say, I want to know what my calling is, what I'm made to do in the world. Well, we find that out outside us. We don't find it out just by looking inside. It's good to look inside and say, what are my interests? What are my passions? What do I like to do? But then we have to ask other people, hey, what do I do well? What could you see me doing? Or what do you think somebody would actually hire me to do? You see what I'm saying? So it's one thing to say, I love basketball. It's another thing to say that I'm going to actually do it professionally.
Sure.
Two very different things.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's something that you're doing that's very interesting. I didn't know that a level four class required 8 hours, on average, of outside work. I'd never been told that.
Right.
And so actually telling a student, do you understand what this class means? When you take this class, it's a 400 level. That means we're expecting you to spend eight hours outside of class in order to get a good grade. If you didn't understand that, then we should talk about that. If you think that you can get by with less, your expectations might be unrealistic. And that's a great thing. Are you having to do that in a lot of other areas, or are you fine? I mean, because I'm a parent. I've got a 4-year-old. Tobin's got a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. And I'm thinking, I want to prepare my son for life. What are some of the things? Is this across the board? And how do we change that?
I think it's a lot of times when it comes to work things, either a job or school, where students somehow think it's going to be easier than it really is going to be.
Yeah.
So I think it's because, like what you were saying, they got this idea by getting trophies in Little League just for showing up. So, you know, the whole mentality now is everyone's told they're special, everyone's told they're wonderful. So kids grow up today not understanding that historically self-confidence has been based on objective results. In other words, a kid sings really well, people say you're a good singer because he sings well. Now we just tell kids you're a good singer regardless of how he sings. So I think the issue is feedback needs to be based on reality, and then we tell students, okay, look, if you want to play good baseball, you have to practice, you know, however many number of hours a week the team practices. Or if you want to be a good basketball player, you're going to have to go to camp in the summer to get better. Just help them understand how work leads to improvement and how results the basis of confidence. Confidence comes when you do something really well.
I think that's such a huge, huge challenge for parents, because you want to tell your kids that they're succeeding.
Right.
I mean, everything in you is like, man, I want to tell them that they're doing an awesome job. And especially now, as my kids get a little older, I mean, especially with my 12-year-old, there are certain things she does really well and there are certain things she doesn't.
Right.
She decided the other day that she wants to be a supermodel. You talk to them about that and you say, you know what, here's what being a supermodel is really all about.
Right.
Here's what that takes. I'm not sure you want to go down that path.
Here's the percentage of kids who want to be supermodels and the ones that actually make it.
Right. Because I'm talking to her and saying, where'd you get this idea? Well, all my friends are going to be supermodels.
Exactly.
And so we start talking about, well what are the percentage chances that every kid in your class is going to end up being a supermodel? And, you know, I try to be realistic with them. On the other hand, I've got a 10-year-old who wants to be a chef, and she participates in cooking dinner every night.
There you go.
And she's really good. And so it's easy to say to her, yeah, you know, you really have some gifting. You can take a bunch of different stuff and turn it into a meal, and that's very cool. And, you know, I encourage her in that. But it's that very fine line that you walk between wanting to encourage your kids and tell them they're good at something, but also present a realistic picture to say, you know what, you're probably not going to be an engineer. You're probably not going to be somebody who, you know, goes to the moon. You're not going to, you know, and yet at the same time encourage their spirit. So what I've tried to do is encourage their character.
Exactly.
More than their behavior.
Right.
I've tried to encourage character and to say, hey, when you do this, when I see you live this out, when I see you treat your mom this way or your grandma, I see your character come out, and that's the thing that's important to me, and that's the thing that I want to encourage, because the rest of it is whims.
Exactly. And a mature, godly, strong character is going to serve her well no matter what she does in her life.
Right.
Because any employer is going to say, you know what, you're a hard worker, you're trustworthy, you're responsible, you're diligent. I'm going to put you in charge of something and then see how you do, and then it will help you.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, Alex, it's interesting hearing you and Tobin talk about that, because there's things that kids are like, oh, I'm going to do this because everybody's going to do it.
Right.
And working to change the norm, because there are things that parents are like, well, I want my kids to do these things because this is what is widely popular or seen as potentially widely successful, when there are a lot of other things that will make your child fulfilled and happy, be able to earn a living, which may not necessarily be of the norm. And to tell them, you don't have to do what everybody else is doing.
Right. I find that a lot with engineering, because engineering is one of those majors that students know engineers tend to be well compensated. Mm-hmm. They tend to make a good amount of money. So I'll meet a lot of freshmen, and I'll say, hey, why do you want to be engineers? And something like half of them will say, well, engineers make a lot of money.
Wow.
So I say, hey, look, first of all, is that even a biblical motivation?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you should want to be able to provide for your family. But
great point.
Should money be what drives you to a major? Money doesn't make anyone happy.
Yeah.
We all need money to pay the bills, but money doesn't actually fulfill our hearts.
It's one of our huge principles here, and I want to get right to that when we get back from the commercial break here on Grounded Radio. We've got two copies of the book to give away, a sample chapter, and articles Alex has written at groundedradio.com. We'll be back with Alex Chediak right after the commercial break.
Don't worry, your sweet little head. Grounded will be right back.
The man known as Dr. Death is dead. I'm John Stone Street, and this is The Point. I just asked a group of Christian students last week if they knew of Jack Kevorkian, but most had not heard of this man who helped scores of human beings kill themselves, or how he killed 52-year-old Thomas Yauch by lethal injection and then broadcast the execution on national TV. It was that murder that finally sent Kevorkian to jail, where he promised to starve himself. But he didn't. Instead, he agreed not to kill anyone else, and he was released after serving only 6 years. He was a hero in Hollywood. He was celebrated in an HBO film called You Don't Know Jack, which earned Al Pacino an Emmy. Later, I asked those same students if they knew of Kermit Gosnell, that Philadelphia abortion doctor arrested earlier this year for murdering at least one woman and seven infants in his House of Horrors. But they hadn't heard of him either. They were blissfully unaware of what has shaped their culture of death and how that culture of death is shaping them. When it comes to what really matters in our culture, many students just don't know Jack. I'm John Stone Street.
Time for today's Family Facts from the Heritage Foundation.
Today's Family Fact is, the true cost of welfare is greater than most people realize. More than 70 welfare programs that span 13 government departments are projected to cost $10 trillion or more over the next decade, a debt to be paid by future generations. But that's just part of the true cost of welfare, once known as poverty relief. In 1935, even President Roosevelt, a social liberal, had to admit, quote, continued dependence upon relief induces a spiritual and moral disintegration fundamentally destructive to the national fiber. To dole out relief in this way is to administer a narcotic, a subtle destroyer of the human spirit.
Get it right with FamilyFacts.org from the Heritage Foundation.
Next time on Family Talk, advice for busy dads from Robert Wagamuth.
Take the skills that you're learning at home to be better in your job. Take the skills that you're learning in the job and take them home. Your family needs what you're learning at work, and your place of work needs what you're learning at home.
Hear this practical conversation just in time for Father's Day on the next Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.
Hit It Again with Grounded and Ryan Dobson.
Hey, everybody, we're back. I'm Ryan Dobson with Tobin Heim. Alex Chediak online talking about his book, Thriving at College. Alex, when we dropped off, if people are just joining us, they should hear the first half of this program. One of the concepts we talk about here on Grounded a lot is that money won't make you wealthy, that it can buy you things. Those things won't necessarily make you happy. And trying to figure out what wealth means and what will make you satisfied and content, because choosing a major based only on the amount of money you can receive from it is probably not going to make you fulfilled in the long run. And I would normally talk about that, but there's a bunch of other things that you have a lot of experience in, and so I kind of want to get into those. One of the things you talk about in your book is whether or not somebody ought to reveal what their faith is in other settings, either in a scholastic setting, in a classroom, or in a work environment, and you know, understanding what it means when you make that statement of, this is who I am, this is what I believe. What do you tell students when you're talking about thriving in college? We can apply that in thriving in work situations,
sure,
as well, about revealing your faith life.
Yeah, no, in thriving at college, one of the things I tell students who are in secular universities is, hey, look, in secular universities, the professors, the percentage of atheist and agnostic professors is about 6 to 8 times larger than in society at large. Society at large, about 4% of people are atheists or agnostics. In universities, in secular universities, it's anywhere from 24 to 37%. So chances are, if your professor starts off saying, look, I don't believe in Christianity. I think it's ridiculous. It's intolerant. The Bible's full of errors, this kind of thing.
Right.
You raising your hand and trying to fight with him in front of 100 students is probably not a very good idea. It's just not a very wise and strategic way to make a Christian witness. It's much wiser, I think, to maybe ask good questions like, how do you deal with the problem of evil? How do you get a basis for morality? Or how do you explain how life began from nothing? And to try to learn what they think, and maybe try to expose gently some of the weaknesses of their worldview.
Right.
Just realizing that your professor has assumptions that have less credibility than Christian assumptions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. And I've talked with a lot of students about that, saying, "Listen, you have to understand. If you want to get a good grade, you have got to repeat back, regurgitate back what a professor says to you." I'm not blanket stating that all professors are giving you lies. I am saying that if you want to get a good grade, that's how you do it. If you would like to argue truth, you can.
Well, you have a great story about a professor that you went toe-to-toe with on these issues.
I did it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's not that I was wrong. It's that, on one, I did it in the wrong way. I was very, very disrespectful, and that's never there's rarely, rarely a cause for that. And two, I was arguing something against what she believed and taught, and therefore my grade was affected for it. And so you've got to understand that. You talk about the basic lines of attack. There are two basic lines of attack that believers encounter intellectually and morally. Can you tell a little bit about those, and let's talk about how do we counter those attacks?
So on the intellectual side, intellectually, you're going to meet a lot of atheists in secular university. I just was talking about the statistics are pretty incredible. So you're going to hear things like, how can you believe the Bible when it's full of errors? Or you're going to hear things like my wife was told in a biology class, the professor said, "Hey, look, some of you guys are Christians, came from Christian homes. I want you to know that has no bearing whatsoever to this class. Basically, your faith is what you do on Sunday morning, has no basis in actual reality." I think you counter some of those things by realizing, first of all, you aren't the only one hearing that. And people in your class, there are other Christians in secular universities, and there are even Christians on the faculty of secular universities. If you look for them in places like Christian organizations, you can find them, and there are answers to these questions. If you study the Bible, you can resolve the tensions, the so-called contradictions can be resolved. There is historical, reasonable, rational basis for the Christian faith. So I think it's good to tell Christians, look, there are answers to these questions. Let me help you with some resources. Let me help you with some books and some people that can help you address these questions intellectually in a very rational and calm and gracious manner. Now, on the moral issue, that's different in the sense that there's lifestyles that people are engaging in that are just things that are going to be opposite of what God says will ultimately make us happy. You know, the Bible is in a sense a roadmap for how God made us to live. So when God gives us commandments, for example, about avoiding fornication or avoiding sex outside of marriage, he's not doing that because he doesn't want us to be happy. He wants us to have the happiest experience with regard to our sexual intimacy. So I think just helping Christians realize that God does want them to be happy and that his moral laws are designed to help us live in a way consistent with how we're made. And then to realize that non-Christians don't know that, they're going to live a different way, and there may be some temporary immediate thrill with their lifestyle and choices, but the bitterness and the pain and the sorrow will come and will eventually hurt them and eventually detract from their life experience.
But one of the challenges is helping kids understand that.
Yeah.
Right? That's a thing that I think all parents would articulate. Look, you're moving into a situation where you're going to have the ability to make decisions that are going to affect the rest of your life.
Right.
And growing up, you know, 0 to 18, there are some of those.
Yeah.
But when you get out in a college environment, that starts a process through which you will start to make the most important decisions you ever make. You'll decide your major, which decides your career. You may decide to get married. You may decide down the road to have kids. I mean, there's a whole succession of decisions that get made after you get to that point of quote unquote adulthood. How do you help a kid at a young age decide or correctly give value or import or importance to those kind of decisions that they're going to be faced with when they get to college?
You know, I think on the moral issue, it's a matter of realizing that a lot of the wisdom of Proverbs has to do with listening, self-control, delayed gratification, recognizing that take the long view. I think it's important to help young people take the long view of their choices. Whatever you do today is going to have long-term ramifications, so choose wisely. How you recreate, what you consider fun. You know, those students who find so-called fun in getting drunk and vomiting the next day, think about the long-term consequences of that. Think about whatever you choose to do on the campus for recreation will either enslave you or it'll empower you to do good work. So in terms of your choices as to who you hang out with, what you do for fun, there's some feedback there. In terms of your major, I think look at your interests and your gifts, but also look at what you're good at. Get feedback from professors. Get feedback from your parents. And make a choice based on sound judgment, and then be open to changing it. A lot of times students make the wrong choice at first, and that's okay. You choose a major your freshman year, doesn't end up working out, not the end of the world. Go ahead and switch it. It's important to get feedback from other people, I think, as to what would be a good choice for you. Look both internally and externally to make those choices.
Sure, and get a variety of responses. Don't just ask one person. You never know what that person's going to say. I remember getting done with a talk one time, and I thought it went really well. And I left, and there was the next guy that was coming on was like, "Hey, I heard your talk." And I go, "Oh, I appreciate listening." He goes, "Yeah, that was entertaining."
Ouch.
And it was one of those backhanded compliments. I was like, "Really? Was that necessary? Did you need to tell me that you know?" It was just such an odd thing. And I've heard of people who are phenomenal writers and artists who had an angry, maybe unsuccessful high school teacher or professor who was like, "Oh, you're never going to do this. You're never going to do that unless you do it this way."
Right.
And they look back and think, man, how sad that in your failure, you were steering kids in a different direction. You know,
right. I think you're absolutely right, Brian. The proverb says, in the abundance of counselors, there's wisdom. And it's good to get a variety of feedback and really and ask yourself, when someone tells me such and such, what's potentially their agenda behind it? Like, sometimes people will tell you, just go into the field that they're in. Like, a history professor will meet a student and say, "Go into history."
Yeah.
They're saying that because they, in a sense, get credit when that student pursues history. But that may not be the right calling for that student.
Sure. And there's nothing wrong with pursuing a major so that you can think deeper and have a more satisfied thought life. You know, I've talked about a guy I know who's a plumber who has a degree in philosophy. And I was saying that, talking to a bunch of kids, and they started laughing. I said, "Why is that funny?" You know, he makes a great living as a plumber. They make a good living doing what he does. And he's an expert in his field. And he thinks on a very, very deep level while he, you know, completes plumbing jobs. He's got a...
And that philosophy degree enriches his life in ways that are non-material. A lot of times students today are all about, what's it going to do for me? How is this class going to affect my life? And all they're doing is thinking about, you know, am I ever going to need to know the history of World War I? Or am I ever going to need to know how to multiply and divide complex fractions or something like that? It's like, well, think about, you're in college to learn how to think so that for the rest of your life you can love God with a well-trained mind.
A mind that
can analyze arguments and break them down, discover fallacies, communicate effectively. That's going to help you no matter what you do in the career world, in the home, in the church, in society.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so often the only question we ask in regards to classes are return on investment.
Yeah.
How will this make me more money when I graduate? And really, that ought not to be really in the top questions, I think. And
parents have to take some responsibility for that.
Sure.
Because as a parent, if Audrey came to me and said, "I'm going to get my major in philosophy," I would have to struggle with that.
Right.
Now, you and I, Ryan, have talked enough to know there's value to that. My mind has been changed. I would be very open to the idea. But for the vast majority of parents, if you're getting a history degree, if you're getting a philosophy degree, if you're getting your degree in theology, that is a tough one for a lot of parents to swallow.
Right. You're absolutely right. And we're seeing numbers go down in those fields as a result. We're seeing people go into engineering and they don't have the skills and background for it. But like we said earlier, someone's pushing them that way, or they're going into medicine. They think they're going to make a lot of money in medicine. Only about 10% of freshmen who say they're going to go into medicine actually do go on to medical school.
Right.
So it's that disproportionate. People come in with all these distorted ideas of what's good and what's valuable. And I think it's important to ask yourself, don't ask yourself about an education, what can I do with it? But ask, what is it doing to me? Education is about making you a more godly Christian, a more thoughtful Christian.
Yeah,
more
you know,
Christian
we I was
engaged culture.
It's so interesting. I was with Gary Bauer from the Family Research Council, one of the smartest people I've ever known, let alone gotten to talk to in my entire life. And one of his kids got a degree, and I'm trying to think of what it was. It was a degree that he looked at and just thought, seriously, what kind of a job are you going to get with that? And she now has a very, very successful job doing exactly what that major was. And he goes, I got to hand it to her. She stuck with it. She's got a great job. She proved me wrong. And it allows him to think about that in a different way. And I like that. My wife's got a great degree. She was going to actually run retirement homes. And she cares compassionately about the elderly. And it gives her compassion that she passes along to my son. And I see other moms who are getting great degrees. We had Phyllis Schlafly and Susan Venker on the program Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on Family Talk this week. And Susan talks about getting a degree because it makes you smarter. It allows you to talk with your husband in a deeper way and allows you to meet, you know, via your mind when it's not just about a monetary return on investment.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I got married about 6.5, 7 years ago, and one of the things that I loved about my wife was she was a manager for a phone company, an intelligent, capable person, but was very happy to transition into being a mom and raising kids and all that. And so she was not afraid to use her gifts in the workplace, but not afraid to transition into the home and use her intelligence and her skill of management in that environment. So I think you're absolutely right. Especially for women, I think sometimes the cultural pressures are, hey, when are you going to ever use this stuff? But actually, an education is a wonderful thing. It makes you a deeper person, a more capable conversationalist, knowing how to think, how to interact with the world, your husband, with your children, everything.
So let me ask you a question, because you've been at secular and Christian institutions. As a parent, which direction do I steer my kid? You know, if I'm thinking about both of these environments,
right,
and I want my kid to have a successful experience. I went to Christian college, and I know what goes on at Christian college, and it's not always all that Christian.
Right.
So this assumption can't be made, oh, if little Johnny goes off to, you know, whatever Baptist college, he's going to have this protected, well-rounded Christian education. That simply may not happen.
Right.
So what do you tell a parent who's wrestling with that decision?
You know, I have an appendix in Thriving at College on the whole Christian versus non-Christian college question. I think there are actually pros and cons of each path. And like you said, neither path is going to guarantee you an environment free from distraction, free from sinful distraction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, secular colleges tend to have more programs. Larger universities tend to have more resources, more facilities. And it may be geographically preferable. I think one of the questions that's important in a college is geography and church and family being accessible. In other words, if you go 1,000 miles away to a school where you know absolutely nobody, is your 18-year-old student going to be able to handle that very well? That's an important question. So I think geography is important. Who does he know there? What kind of church can he or she get involved in? As you know, whether he's at a secular school or Christian school, then consider things like what are the faculty like, what's the program that he's going to go into, and does he have the maturity to handle what he's going to encounter. You know, Christian school is one of the main benefits about them is you can check it out. They're going to be different, but at a lot of them, they're only going to hire Christian faculty, and some of them are only going to hire Christian faculty that believe certain statement of faith. So you can actually have the ability to ask those kind of questions in a deeper way.
Awesome. Alex, okay, right before we go, I know you don't have a lot of time. Give me three things parents can do to help their kids thrive in college, starting at whatever age it is, even if it's general, so the parents can look at their kids and go, am I raising my kids in a way that they have a better chance of thriving once they're out of the house, regardless of if it's college, but three things we can do to help our kids in that way.
Sure. I'd say number one is help them get grounded in the faith. Help show them that the Christian faith it has applications for every area of life. I think be honest with your kids about how does your Christian faith affect you as an employee, affect you in the world, and help them see that Christianity is a faith that's authentic, it's real, and it should affect us Monday through Friday. Surviving college as a Christian is too low of a goal. I think we should encourage our young adults to grow in their faith in the college years, not just survive, but Christianity is something that you can use as a foundation from which to grow. That'd be number one. Secondly, academically, help them realize that what you're good at, other people, your professors will know what you're good at. Listen to the feedback that you get. Don't just believe and be headstrong about what you think is right for you. Be open to the feedback of other people in your life, Christians and non-Christians, who say, you know what, you're really good at history or you're really good at math. Get that feedback from them as well. And then the third thing would be really to recognize that college is about launching into adulthood. It's about not just academic growth, but it's about relational growth and spiritual growth and professional growth, to not neglect their character for the sake of academics, or vice versa. You know, I have some students who are all about recreation and relationships. They have great friends at college, but their academics aren't very good, and they're not really honoring God in the classroom. Conversely, I have students who are studying 60 hours a week, and they're not making friends. They're just pasty white in the library all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not really honoring God in their social life and realizing there's other things to life besides work. And if you graduate and all you do is work, you're going to miss out on a lot of the joys of life. So really living an integrated, balanced life where Christ is the Lord and everything comes out of that. My relationships are meant to honor God and give me fun and recreation, and my academics are meant to honor God. I'm going to honor God in the workplace. I'm going to honor God on Friday night. Seeing all their life is integrated.
I love it. I love it. Alex, I love it. I appreciate you being on today. We're going to give away two copies of your book. We've also got some excerpts from the book online at groundedradio.com and a link to your website. And I look forward to talking to you again. I love having a guest on that isn't stuck on one subject, that we can talk about a variety of things, and I know you're that person. So we appreciate what you're doing, and we're going to keep promoting what you are.
Ryan, thank you for having me. Really appreciate being with you guys this morning.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of your week.
Same to you, man.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Ty dug that.
You know
dug
it. You know what blows me away?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's given those 3 points at the end, and I'm thinking, those are points I want to apply to my life.
Yep.
I'm not in college.
Yeah,
I've been
yeah.
out of college 20 years almost.
You know,
and yet when he's talking about these principles, I think, why am I not taking those to heart, you know?
Yeah, I tell you, one of the things that he said, we talk about having your kids survive
right.
something. And he
right.
goes, no, it's not survival. For a
right.
Christian kid, survival is really setting the bar low.
Right.
Thrive.
Yeah, it's a time
thrive.
Of growth.
If you can raise your child so that they thrive outside of your gaze,
right.
outside of your control, other people will look to them as leaders.
Right.
That's what we're trying to do
yeah.
so that they thrive in situations. You get into a situation that might be uncomfortable for some kids. I remember being on a team where we traveled to a foreign country with a bunch of kids. The kids that could thrive in situations that either they hadn't been in before or could make some kids uncomfortable immediately became leaders. Any kid that had been overseas before, that knew how to fill out customs forms, that had been through customs and security checkpoints and all those things, other kids constantly looked
right.
to them as their leaders. And
yeah.
we can raise kids like that. We can be like that.
Well, and it makes me think about the fact that I don't want to raise kids that are just surviving.
Yeah.
You know, what quality of life is that? And I think kids that survive turn into teenagers that survive, turn into adults that survive. And you get this path started where I just want to survive the tween years. So I'm going to do everything I can to just get through that. And then we're going to get into the high school years. And I just want to survive that as a parent. And I want my student to survive that. And then they get to college and I just want them to survive that. And I build this very low expectation into their life that all I want them to do is survive. But then when they graduate from college, what do I expect them to do? I expect them to thrive. Well, the reality is I've only taught them to survive the first 22 years of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm
mm-hmm.
expecting them to experience this fullness, great relationships, a great walk with Christ, a great satisfaction in their career, a marriage or some other significant relationship. And I can't do that if I'm going to really do what's right by my kid. I need to teach them to thrive at every stage so that the expectation is, hey, when you're done with college, you're just going to keep thriving, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. You know, we talked about the most important thing is a strong faith life. It's really why we do what we do here. One
right.
of the big things we do is equip people to evangelize and to teach a Christian worldview so that it inspires you to put your faith into action. But understanding the Christian worldview, it's why we did what we did today.
Right.
You took a topic where he's got a book called Thriving in College, and it's for parents. And by the way, if you've got a kid who's getting ready to go off to college and you want to copy this book, email me, Ryan@iamgrounded.com. Tell me you've got a kid going to college, you want them to thrive, or if you've got a young kid, you got a kid. How about that?
Any
if you've
kid.
Got a kid, Tell me how old they are and that you want this book because you want to prepare them to thrive in all situations. I'm going to send you a copy of that book. Once those two books are gone, I'll still send you a link to the articles that Alex has written and a way to obtain a copy of that book. But faith, man, my dad, we were talking about it just the other day. The most important thing you can do as a parent
right.
is pass your faith on to yeah. your child and do it in a way that gives them a strong foundation, not a weak faith, not as Santa Claus, you know, Jesus as Santa Claus right. or Jesus as great cheerleader in the sky or genie in a bottle wish granter, but a solid, realistic foundation that allows them to thrive.
Well, Alex made the point in point number one of those three things that parents can do, and that's demonstrating to your kids your own robust faith. And we certainly had those conversations with Kara Powell when we were talking to her about sticky faith. Mm-hmm. If you expect your kids to have a vibrant, real, authentic, genuine, growing faith, they have to see that modeled. So you can't preach it to your kids and then live something else out. You can't tell your kids, hey, I want you at Sunday school. I want you at youth group. I want you growing in your faith. I want you in your Bible. I want you doing all these things. And then they see a parent that doesn't have any vibrancy in their own faith, and their motivation for being that kind of growing Christian goes out the window.
Yeah.
You know, we talk so much about duplicity of kids, and I think that's one of the reasons kids that go to Christian colleges freak out, because they spent so much time mm-hmm. honing a persona that their parents would approve of, because kids want their parents' approval.
Sure.
So they work and work and work to create a them that their parent is going to say, oh, yeah, that's a really, really good kid.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
they go to college and they get hammered and they stay hammered for the first semester until their head clears and they think, well, maybe this isn't the best way I should go about it. But the reality is they're taught that behavior because as parents, a lot of times we fake it. And we put on a mask because we want the acceptance of our boss or the acceptance of our pastor or the acceptance of our spouse. And we're not willing to live out
yeah.
a genuine, true, messy, dangerous faith. And I think Alex makes that point. Certainly others have made that point. That's the thing that we pass along to our students. And that's the thing that ultimately makes them successful.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where the duplicitous lifestyle comes in.
Right.
Where we meet kids that go to church on Sundays and profess faith in Jesus and understand tenets of faith and yet live a completely different lifestyle. And I think, how do you do that? Because they've been raised by people living a duplicitous lifestyle.
That's right.
Who say, we care about church and we care about the Lord and we care about the Bible. And I don't treat my wife very well, or I disrespect my husband in public,
yeah.
or I cheat on my taxes, and the list goes on and on. They've got that what they think is a secret life.
Right.
And you see it represented in their
yeah.
kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because kids know, man. Kids are so smart.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they pick
yeah.
up on everything. And if something's not right, your kid's going to know it. And if you're living that duplicitous life, you can't expect that your kid is not going to be aware of what's going on and somehow they're going to miss it. Mm-hmm. And the reality is they're going to live that out. They're going to see it modeled. They're going to see how it works for you and they're going to pursue it. The kids that I know that are most healthy,
yeah.
you know, we all have them in our lives. The kids that we can think about where we go, man, that parent did a really good job. Those are coming from authentic families. I think about John Lynch, who we had on, gosh, it was months and months ago, who talked about how his kids, you know, have actually turned out okay. And the reason that happened is he never tried to fake it with them.
Yep.
When things
yep,
were yep. bad, he let them know they were bad. And when things were good, he let them know they were good.
Yeah, yeah.
But he allowed them to enter into the truth of what was going on in their family. He didn't shield them from that, and then showed them how his faith impacted the decisions that he was going to make for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I think that's huge.
Think about – I just – you know – I don't know why. Obviously, the Lord's talking to me. I've been reading in Acts and Romans, doing my YouVersion Bible. I love YouVersion so much.
Yeah.
Oh,
are you
my goodness.
To the
I love
audio
it.
Version?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. My mornings have been amazing. I get up, I turn on my YouVersion Bible plan, I start the coffee maker, I go outside, turn on the hose for the garden, and listen to the Bible while eating. If Lincoln wakes up, I feed him, do the same thing. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But I've been thinking about what an amazing, amazing God that we have. And when you think about breaking the cycle, because so oftentimes the scripture that the sins of the father revisited upon the next generations, and then you have somebody like we had yesterday, Dr. Kathy McReynolds in, who broke that cycle and is doing a good job.
Well, and our guest tomorrow.
Yeah, baby.
Same deal.
Yep.
Yep. Broke a cycle.
Yeah. And Brian Welch, Ed from Korn is going to be on tomorrow. And Chris Beal on Friday.
Breaking the bonds of pornography.
You've got it.
We had a lot of bond breaking this week.
Man, it's just, that is what the Holy Spirit is about. It's what the Lord is about. And I hope that not only are we equipping you to use the principles found in the Bible to evangelize people who don't know the Lord, but are strengthening your Christian worldview in a way that you understand why you believe what you believe, why we do what we do. You're able to articulate that to other people, and that inspires you to put your faith into action. Man, if we are doing that, let us know. Email us, ryan@iamgrounded.com. If we're not, if you think there's a better way that we could be accomplishing our goals, please let me know, and we will honestly look at that with very, very open minds to see how we can best accomplish those goals of equipping you to evangelize, of teaching a solid foundational Christian worldview that inspires you to put your faith into action. All these things are going to be at groundedradio.com. Today, excerpt from the book Thriving at College, Alex's website, links to the articles that he's written, and we're giving away two free copies of the book Thriving at College if you'll email me, ryan@iamgrounded.com. You know what? It is summertime. We are lean on the giving. I got to say, we are lean on the giving. If you can help us out, we'd appreciate it. At groundedradio.com, click on the donate link. Do whatever you possibly can. And we still have a matching program going on that will double whatever help you can offer us. And we appreciate it. Tomorrow, we'll be live with Brian Welch, head from Korn. Have a great night. We will see you then. God bless.
We'll be back tomorrow. Start planning now.